Previously on Coffee with Kenobi.
I wasn't really crazy about the one with Han Solo that took place during the Force Awakens timeline. What did you all think about that one?
I like that one. What do you mean you didn't like it?
It was eh.
Don't worry, Lisa. Him and I argue all the time.
Yeah, boy.
It's not really an argument if I win. I mean, come on.
This is Vanessa Marshall, Harrison Dula from Star Wars Rebels, and you're listening to Coffee with Kenobi.
Hello and welcome to show number 94 of Coffee with Kenobi, your spoiler-free place for Star Wars discussion, analysis, and rhetoric. I'm your host, Dan Z, drinking some hot tea with honey and lemon in a Rancho Obi-Wan mug. You may notice that my voice sounds a little different. I do have a bit of laryngitis, hence the tea, but I am ready to move forward. I feel great. And let's have some Star Wars conversation because there's just always fun stuff to talk about with each and every one of you. We hope to make you think about Star Wars in a whole new way and maybe laugh a little bit in the process. On today's show, we will talk about the Star Wars Rebels episodes In the Name of the Rebellion, Parts 1 and 2. We have a CWK exclusive from Mark Newbold about his newest project. You will hear it here first. CWK newsman Tom Gross, who's also co-hosting the show, will bring us the latest news. In the coffee chat, we are going to have two cups of coffee to share. The first is part one of my conversation with Mark Pavia, horror filmmaker, and the second is a continuation of our CWK book study on Leia, Princess of Alderaan, with chapters 23 to 29. So I hope you'll bear with my voice, pull up a chair, grab your favorite coffee mug, and let's have some coffee with Kenobi.
And now, let's see what's brewing in the Star Wars universe this week.
Joining us today for a cup of coffee is Bethany Blanton from the Star Wars Report. Welcome, Bethany.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on.
You bet. And also joining us is our CWK newsman, Tom Gross.
Hey, hello, everybody.
All right. Well, as I said at the top of the show, obviously my voice is not ideal, but that's okay. We are going to push through. We've got some great Star Wars to talk about, especially the most recent episodes of Star Wars Rebels.
I liked these episodes. They surprised me because I did see the very first episode of this season while I was at Celebration, and I really liked it there as well. But I was just looking at the list of Rebels episodes, and I just realized that we're basically halfway through the season and it's coming to an end, and I got really sad like 5 minutes before the show started.
No, I know.
Like, no.
I saw the first episode at Celebration as well, and I was just stunned with how heavy it was. And like you said, we're already halfway through, but in this one we have the return of Saw, and I'm curious to see what you both think about Saw, both as a character and in this arc.
Watching this episode, it was really neat to see Saw back again. The thing that I think this story is really bringing out, and Dan, I talked to you before about, I watch Rebels with my 10-year-old daughter, Kaylee, who's been on the show for Star Wars Reads Day. And one thing that we really focused on in our conversation was about Saw and the levels of good, and where does Saw Gerrera land in the story of good? And I thought this episode really brought that out. And you know, and he challenges Ezra and Sabine with that. And I think it's interesting that he chooses, you know, two of the youngest members of the crew to pull aside and bring along on his mission. And so I thought that was an interesting a way to make that happen and make us all as viewers consider those. You know, what is good? What is too far? Really like his line where he says, "I've lost everything, and when you lose everything, you have clarity." And what a powerful moment that is.
I was talking to some buddies of mine about these episodes, or rather, I was lurking in the chat. I haven't really given my opinion yet, but one of them was mentioning how Saw and Mon Mothma at this point don't seem that different. Mon Mothma was willing to send her people on a dangerous mission that apparently got a lot of them killed and a lot of, and they lost a lot of fighters as well. But Saw in some ways has embraced taking it a couple of steps further than that. And I kind of wonder to what length the rebellion might be willing to go, because obviously they want to remain loyal to their people, which is something that in the end, I think the biggest difference between Saw Gerrera and Mon Mothma is that he's willing to make a lot more sacrifices in a way that betrays those that are around him. And we see a bit of that, or at least we're hinted at it in Rogue One. We may not know every single detail of the story, but we know that Jen feels betrayed by Saw. And at the end of this scenario, Ezra and Sabine are left feeling that way too.
Well, and it's interesting that you say that. To me, the thing that stands out and clearly separates the two is the only time we ever see Mon Mothma not only raise her voice, but she's angry, and we've never really seen it like that at all, really. And she says, I don't know the exact lines off the top of my head, but she basically says, you are killing innocent people. And that, I think, is a gigantic dividing line where Mon Mothma would not do that. Yes, there's some people that lost their lives in sacrifice, but they are also a part, willingly, of a rebellion, and they know what's at stake. Innocents, women, children, you know, farmers, people who are not interested in having weapons, they're the ones that Saw will destroy for his own end, and it's scary.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting, Bethany, what you had said and brought out that clear distinction of sacrifice between the two factions, will you? Mon Mothma willing to sacrifice her own. And Dan, as you mentioned, her own that are willing participants in the rebellion. And Saw Gerrera sacrifices in a different sort of way, and that is whatever it takes to win, which could include his own imperial forces as well as the innocents. So interesting distinction that I think was in my head. It just hadn't come out yet.
Well, I may have, now that I'm thinking back to what Mon Mothma was saying, I may have misunderstood, because I thought that she was saying more like collateral damage. But now that I'm kind of rethinking through it, she accused him of actually intentionally killing innocents who got in the way, not yes. just accidental. Oh, okay. Yeah. Then yes, Dan, you're totally right.
And that's the thing with Saw. And this is perfect that this even happened in our conversation, because Saw takes what we know to be true and subverts it and confuses it. And we see Ezra kind of go through that struggle. Mm-hmm. And he luckily comes to the other side easily, because there are all those prisoners and he doesn't even have to think about it. We have to save these people. He doesn't even know why they're there. He doesn't even care. He just knows we have to save them. And Saw just, I guess, he drives me crazy. I mean, even in the first Onderon arc when we first met him, I knew he was problematic, and I appreciate what he does, and that is his purpose, and the storytelling obviously has accomplished that. But he frustrates me.
Can I ask, there's a part of this story arc that I was just dying to seesaw, get it, seesaw, sorry.
Oh, well done.
I really wanted to see, I can't get away from it, Saw.
You could say witness.
I wanted to witness Saw get a success here. And were either one of you wanting to, you know, he wanted so badly to see where that cargo ship was going so that he could put his eyes on the secret weapon. I so badly wanted to see where the weapon was at, like, in its development at that point. And when they end up in the middle of space with the rendezvous with the Star Destroyer, I felt as crushed as he did when there was nothing to be seen.
No, I thought it would have been cool just to see the Death Star like that, but I didn't think it would happen, because I knew that the Rebellion didn't have any knowledge of it, because this is before Rogue One. So I was kind of relieved, too, because he would only cause destruction and chaos. It would be interesting to have an entire show about him and how he's more like the Empire than the Rebellion.
Hmm. Yeah. I think at this point, Saw has lost sight of why he initially started fighting the Empire, and because of the loss that he speaks of, he is driven by grief and rage and revenge. And because of that, I mean, he may not stoop as low as some Imperials, but he has definitely stooped very low. And at this point, it's a at all costs war for him.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And as we said previously, be sure to check out Aaron Harris's Rebels Reactions on our Coffee with Kenobi Network for an even more of an in-depth look. We will take our first break, and up next, we have a Coffee with Kenobi exclusive as Mark Newbold returns and discusses his all-new Star Wars project. This is Coffee with Kenobi.
This is Coffee with Kenobi.
I want to give a very special shout-out to our CWK Patreon contributors, including Tyler Wiggins, Ben Elkington, Terry Lee, Dennis Keithley, Aaron Harris, Angela South, Mediocre Jedi, Christian Dale, Christo Hating, Jason Hall, Brian McKinney, Jim Capron, Connie Shee, Mike Audette, Adam Leonard, Jared Cantor, BJ Smith, Eric Struthers, Nick Dico, and Mark Suter. As you know, our Patreon page helps us to pay for equipment, distributing the show to all the podcast catchers, and all the other things that go into the world of podcasting and bringing Coffee with Kenobi to you. And there are a number of incentives, of course, such as coffee mugs with a CWK logo, t-shirts. You get access to our Discord message board page where we have great conversations about Star Wars and kind of behind the scenes of what goes into the show. And if you contribute a certain amount, you will be able to host a show with me for 1, 2, or 4 times in 1 month. So be sure to check out our show notes or the button on the top of our homepage for more information.
Coffee with Kenobi is sponsored by Penguin Random House Audio. Looking to catch up on the latest Star Wars books? Try listening to them on audio. Featuring sound effects and music directly from the movies, Star Wars audiobooks are the definitive listening experience. From brand new audiobooks such as Phasma and Battlefront 2 Inferno Squad to our blockbuster movie tie-in editions, you'll have plenty to keep you entertained. Visit penguinrandomhouseaudio.com/Star Wars for sample clips and to start listing now. Coffee with Kenobi is also sponsored by the Star Wars Digital Card Trader Collecting app from Topps. If you love Star Wars and love the excitement of chasing your favorite Star Wars collectibles, the Star Wars Digital Card Trader Collecting app from Topps is for you. Download the free app from iTunes or Google Play and collect your favorite images from the classic 1977 Star Wars cards to The Clone Wars, Star Wars Rebels, The Force Awakens, Rogue One, The Last Jedi, and much more. Collect and trade with friends new and old through the Star Wars Digital Card Trader Collecting app from Topps. These are the cards you're looking for.
Cogs in this Star Wars fan machine. And Mark, you have some really, really big news for us.
Yeah, I guess if you're into that kind of thing, I suppose I do. Yeah, so people who follow this kind of thing will probably have heard that I left Jedi News. When did I leave? 29th of September, so a few weeks ago now. And big step, obviously, because I've been associated with that site for 7 years. But the upshot of it is I decided a little while ago I wanted to do some new things. Not because I wasn't not because I wasn't enjoying what I was doing at Jedi News, but you know, after 7 years, things, you know, you sometimes need to change things up a little bit, and that's kind of how I felt. So I did my big dramatic goodbye everybody, I'm moving on, which I think some people thought I was stepping away completely from Star Wars and fandom, which couldn't be further from the truth, as it turns out.
Yeah,
I'm sure some people would have been glad to see the back of me, but it's not going to happen. So over the past few months, I've been working on a couple of things. One is a Star Trek website, a daily news Star Trek website, which I'm working on, which should be launching within the next few weeks. But of most relevance to your listeners is a new Star Wars site as well that should be launching, fingers crossed, barring incident, on the 31st of October. And that site is called Fantha Tracks. So that's the new project that I've been bubbling away on for a little while.
Wow. Well,
of course, we're thrilled that you're still doing this because you are, I mean, you, most of the news I've learned from you, honestly. And you,
poor man.
As you said, you were such a big part of Jedi News for such a long time. And I do want to get back to how you came up with the name for Fanthatrax, which I absolutely love. But you still have an absolutely wonderful relationship, both as a friend and as a collaborator with James Burns.
Yes. Yeah, so, I mean, I'm sure, you know, he probably wasn't thrilled when I said that I wanted to do something new because, you know, Jedi News has worked well for a long time. But you've got to do what feels right, as Ben Kenobi once said. You know, and I could have kept carrying on with the site, and I'm sure I'd have been perfectly happy doing that. But I just got this itch, and I'm one of those guys, I do like to settle into things. I mean, I did Lightsaber for 10 years. I've done Jedi News for 7, and now I'm planning this. And this is obviously intended to be a long-term thing as well. So, yeah, James has been very cool about it. Like I say, it's a big upheaval for both. But, yeah, we caught up at New York Comic Con. We had a good catch-up and just a wander around and a good chat. And, you know, we made a point of making sure people understand that, you know, we're still friends and there's no fallout. And, you know, he wishes me luck and obviously I wish him luck. I don't wish Jedi News any ill at all. I mean, good grief. You know, we've both put lots of work into it and the rest of the team as well. So it's the intention is for this to only be good, you know, but you've got to be happy in what you're doing. And we give a lot of time and a lot of effort and, you know, put a lot into what we do. So, it just, like I say, it just felt like the right time for me. But James and the rest of the Jedi News team, they'll be fine. That's a well-oiled machine now, so they know what they're doing. And, yeah, can only wish everybody, you know, the best success.
Oh, absolutely. And I think that's always good for people to hear that, even though it was pretty clear through social media. It's very similar to when Corey left Coffee with Kenobi. It had nothing to do with the friendship. It was just more of a, sometimes you feel called to walk a different path and, you know, absolutely.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, it's not through, like you say, not through any fallout. You know, I mean, obviously people are people, you know, you work together for all that length of time. There's going to be times when, you know, certain things niggle and things don't quite feel right. But then you work and make them right. And we did that, you know, and Jedi News traveled a lot and will travel a lot, continue to, and covers a lot of news and, you know, and we made it work. And, you know, I think that was a worthwhile effort. I'd like to think it was a worthwhile effort, but I'm kind of excited now in the sense that when Jedi News, or certainly when I came onto Jedi News in 2010 and really started posting in 2011, it was known predominantly as a collector site. And I think I brought something from Lightsaber, which was my old site, across, which was, you know, that daily news aspect and sort of branching out a little bit to making it more of a news site than a collecting site. And it's always had a focus on collecting, and it still does, and it continues to. But I think that was what I brought to it. So, you know, to try and make Jedi News a site that people not only want to go to but enjoy going to, and hopefully we did that, and then expanding that again with the podcasts.
Well, as I said before on the show, shortly after Coffee with Kenobi came to be in 2013, you were the first person to send us a press release, and it was for the Caravan of the Force. And I always felt like that was one of the major places for us to feel like we were going in a place that we wanted to go. And I think you've done that for a lot of shows, and clearly you're going to bring that into Fanthatrax. Go ahead and tell us, if you would, how Fanthatrax came to be and how you came up with that name. Because I know when we started our show, that was probably the trickiest thing, that and the logo, which we'll talk about soon.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you're not kidding. I would love to claim that Fanthatrax came to me in a wonderful vision one evening whilst I was just sitting there eating my fish and chips, but it didn't. I was spitballing ideas with my buddy Paul Bateman and came up with a couple of names for something that I might want to do at some juncture. And I won't tell you what the name was because it was rubbish. And Paul told me, oh, that's horrible. Why don't you use Fanthatrax? I says, really? Because he's had that name knocking around forever and a day. And he says, yeah, if you want to use Fanthatrax, use Fanthatrax. That's cool with me. He says, you know, we're friends and I'm cool with that. I kind of know what you're going to do with it. And it's all good. So I would love to claim that was mine, but I can't. It was Paul Bateman. So and I love doing the old play on words. If you follow me on social media, I love my little quirky play on words. That's my thing. I've never come up with a name for my own website, and I still haven't, because Lightsaber was Louis, Jedi News was James, and Fantatrax is Paul. So one of these days well, maybe I won't. Maybe this is my lot in life now. Maybe I'll never come up with a name for a podcast or a website, rather. But that's where that came from. So yeah, I'm not complaining though. I'm perfectly happy with that name. I think hopefully it will give the vibe of what we want to do, because we're all the guys that are involved in it. We're all that little bit older. You know, we're not in our teens and twenties. We're all in our 30s and 40s. So we've seen a lot of what Star Wars is so far. You know, I'm the only one on the team that was around when the first film came out, but you know, most of us were there for the original trilogy, and you know, it has got that slightly kind of a vintage vibe about it. But that's not to say we're not going to cover everything that's new. That's absolutely the intention, to be on top of absolutely as much as we can. So, but yeah, you know, we're all a little bit longer in the tooth, so you've got to honour that in some degree. So I think Fantatrax does that quite nicely.
Wonderful. Well, what is, obviously it's Star Wars related in news and commentary, but what is the particular vibe that you want to create with Fantatrax, and will there be a podcast associated with it?
Yes, there will. Wonderful. The vibe you want to go for is, I mean, something when we were just chucking ideas around, you know, I think I just said it in half jest, you know, we put the fan in Fantatrax sort of thing. It's obviously it's a riff on Fantatrax, and Fantatrax being the old fan club magazine, which was so wonderful in the sense that when I was a kid and I read that magazine, I really felt like I was reading something that somebody at Lucasfilm had bashed out on a typewriter. You know, it made me feel like I got the inside track on things. And not that Fantatrax will give us any more of an inside track than any other site out there, but we do certainly want people to feel like when they visit and when the site launches that, you know, they're part of it. So we do want as much sort of interaction and inclusivity as possible. So one of the things that we're doing that we didn't do before was that we're having people can post on articles directly, whereas at the moment, or at the moment, I'm talking for Jedi News, but on Jedi News you would go to the Facebook page and comment on the Facebook page, but we have got it set so people can comment actually on the articles on the site. So, you know, hopefully that'll bring people in just to get talking, really. We just want to make it a conversation place, you know, that sort of water cooler vibe where people can just throw ideas around, and no idea is a bad idea and no hypothesis is a bad one. Everything's on the table. You know, you can talk about these things and chew it over, because I think, and I've thought about this lately a lot, I think that one of the lifebloods, and there's many, but one of the lifebloods of Star Wars is the fact that it does make you question things, and it does make you hypothesize and wonder all the what ifs. You know, we're 50 days away from The Last Jedi, or we are in the UK. We've got to get it a day ahead of you guys. But you know, it's one of those things where we still really don't know the story and we don't know the details. So we're still at that spitballing point where, well, what if this happens? What if Luke does go dark? What if Rey does do this? What if Kylo does that? And I love that time period before the film comes out when everybody's what if, what if, what if. And I think it's that what if that sustains Star Wars to a huge degree, really. And we want Fantatrax to be a place where people can come and chew these ideas over and have a bit of banter and not argue. We don't want people arguing, but you can disagree respectfully. And oh, I don't think that, I think this. And, you know, that's the kind of thing we want. So we want to make it a talking shop. I guess that's probably a good way of putting it. Somewhere people can come and just talk about these things if they want to. Nobody has to, but if they want to, they can.
Absolutely. And that sounds great. I mean, as you know, creating a unique voice for a podcast, especially a Star Wars podcast, when there are so many wonderful shows out there. So this sounds like an awesome spin. Can you give us sort of an idea about when we can expect to see the first podcast drop, and what is the name, if you are comfortable sharing that now?
The podcasts won't be launching for a few weeks as it stands. We're still compiling stuff in the sense that when we did the Jedi News podcast, for example, you know, we had time because 1138 was already up and running over at Rebel Force Radio, and then we kind of struck out on our own. So we'd already got audio and inserts and such for 1138. James was already doing Collector's Cast over there, so we had the audio, and that had sort of built organically over time. You know, when you're out at conventions and Gwendolyn Christie says, "Hi, Jedi News," or whatever, you can use that as a little insert or whatever you can use here, there and everywhere. Well, we're not starting with that. We've got nothing. So we're building up our sort of our soundboard, if you like. So we've got some music being done and intros being done and all that sort of stuff. I think at the moment, as it stands, depending, and we're being fairly fluid about it, but I would expect the first show to launch in, I think maybe early December. So we'll probably try and get the site up and running and smoothly operating throughout November. Let's see. I mean, we're hoping to do four shows. I will give you another exclusive. We're hoping that the first show will be called Making Tracks, which will be a interview stroke convention focused show. So it will see us, because we do get around a lot of the UK events, and obviously we get abroad as well. So we want to sort of bring event coverage, but also speak to guests who are at the shows, sort of have a feature interview in each episode. So that's the hope for that one. So that's called Making Tracks. We do have plans for other episodes as well. But we'll roll that one out when we get to it. We're not quite there yet. Nothing's coming over. I think a few people had heard that we were taking podcasts from Jedi News. Couldn't be further from the truth. We're not doing that at all. It's everything's completely unique and fresh. So but we're looking forward to it. It's going to be fun. But I think in the short term, get the website up and running first, and start rolling things out afterwards.
Oh yes, and some listeners may not be aware of this, or maybe have considered it, but so much goes into making it the well-oiled machine that it eventually becomes. And there's trial and error, and that's just a natural part of life, but you just let it organically grow, and you have good people on your team. Who will be working with you on Fanta Tracks?
On Fanta Tracks, there will be, obviously, myself. There will be a fellow called Dave Tree. So UK Star Wars fans will probably know Dave. He runs an event called Farthest From, which is a vintage collecting event. But fans of a little bit old will probably remember him best for, he did the Palutoy archive at the first Celebration Europe, which was wonderful, brought all the original Star Wars Palutoy toys and vehicles and such together in one place. So Dave's done that. He's put on events and festivals, different things over the years. So that's Dave. Also Brian Cameron, who was my co-host on Take Cover. He's coming on board as well. So Brian's going to be in charge of the literature section and co-hosting some of the podcasts as well. So that's Brian's contribution. And finally, Matt Booker, who was the social media manager on Jedi News, and he's coming across to do a similar job on Fanta Tracks, and he'll be covering collecting news as well. So it's a good team, and we've also got a handful of other contributors. We're still firming that all up, but we're hoping to have a fairly sizable team just to cover news from across the UK and abroad. So we're looking at getting some people in the States as well, bringing some folks on in Europe. We want to try and cover as much of the planet, our little blue planet, as possible. I mean, Jedi News was obviously known as a UK site. We purposely made it so we're fantatracks.com. So we're very much an international site, even though we're based in the UK. We want to be seen as an international site. So that's a little difference as well. So, we just want to build up a team where everybody gets on and we have a good laugh, because, you know, 50's looming quickly for me. And I put a lot of time into doing all these things, and the Trek site as well. And I just want to have fun. I just want to make sure it's as much fun as possible, because it's not cheap to be a Star Wars fan, as you well know. You know, and you've got to enjoy it. And, you know, you're giving up time that you could be spending with your family or with your friends or doing other things. So it's got to be worthwhile, I think. And whilst, you know, I've been into this since day one, and I'd probably be doing, so even if it was just me on my own, I'd have just gone off and done a blog. But doing it with people that you like and people that you get on with, and you know, all willing to get out there and work, and we all want to meet new people and have good new experiences, go to different events and do different things. You know, that's really lit a fire under me now. So I'm kind of more than anxious to get started and really keen to just get out there and see what we can do.
Well, I think it's inspirational. I mean, again, everything that goes into this, and you're just fearless. And that's one of the things I've always admired about you. And you're also very open and welcoming to the community, which obviously Fanta Tracks will be. But I'm also excited to see what your logo is going to look like.
Well, as we speak, so am I. I've seen a rough. as we speak, yes. So I've seen a rough. The rough is fantastic. So I will make sure that when this episode goes out, that you have the artwork, so you can post it to accompany the website, to accompany this podcast. Sure. But it's again, it's Mr. Bateman. So he's been noodling around as he does, and coming up with various ideas. But we've come up with a character. We haven't got a name for him yet. So he's basically, he's a little fella with the head of a bantha,
he's a Fantha, but we want to give him a name. So if you remember the old Bantha Tracks magazine back in the day, it was just the, you know, it was just the official Star Wars fan club. And then somebody had the bright idea of, well, why don't we open this to the readers and give the magazine a name? And then, you know, the name Bantha Tracks came from that little sort of small competition and has been part of Star Wars fandom and Star Wars history ever since. So we're thinking of doing a similar thing, but in the sense of opening the name, you know, the naming of this character up to readers who can, you know, just come up with some cool little gimmicky name for our little our mascot, really. He's basically a mascot. So we'll be launching that fairly soon, and hopefully we'll land on something really cool. But it's just a little bit different. Like I say, I mean, the Jedi News logo is so well known amongst fandom now. You can't really miss it. The colours look great. It's a great looking logo. Adam Lamping, that was there at Jedi News when I first started, designed it and did a great job. And so that's something that we thought, well, we need something that's got that that impact and that immediacy that the Jedi News logo has got, because people know that. And, you know, you can see us coming at conventions wearing the blue shirts and such. So but we're confident we've landed on something that's not a million miles away, but certainly having a little a mascot character is something very different. So, looking forward to wearing it.
Oh, wow. That's cool. The mascot idea. I had never even thought about that. So maybe someday there'll be a soccer team named after you. After the
Well, wouldn't that be nice? Well, I'm a West Bromwich Albion fan. Nobody outside of West Midlands has ever heard of West Bromwich Albion, but I've always fancied owning a football team called West Bromwich Alderaan. So maybe one day it will happen, but probably not.
And I realized that I said soccer instead of football, but that was to remind everybody that we're on opposite sides of the pond, but it doesn't stop us from communicating and being great friends. I look forward definitely to seeing more about this and to seeing you out at conventions and online. And I'm assuming that very, very soon you'll have a social media presence. So where can people find you right now, just personally and for the future Fantha Tracks, if they want to ask you a question or just say hello?
Okay, well, you'll find me on Twitter at prefect_timing. I'm a Hitchhikers fan, so I wanted to change it up. So it's prefect, prefect _timing on Twitter. I'm out on Instagram somewhere, and I cannot honestly remember off the top of my head what I'm called. I think I'm just Mark Newbold on Instagram. And I'm on Facebook at Mark Lightsaber Newbold as well. And then just to give you a heads up as well for the social media for Fantha Tracks, everything is just at Fantha Tracks. So Twitter's at Fantha Tracks, Instagram at Fantha Tracks, and Facebook at Fantha Tracks. So we've kept it nice and simple.
Great. Well, Mark, thank you again for coming back to Coffee with Kenobi. We look forward to much, much more from you and from Fantha Tracks.
Thank you very much. Always a pleasure to come and chat.
Mark Newbold, everybody. When we come back, Tom has news. This is Coffee with Kenobi.
This is Vanessa Marshall, and you're listening to Coffee with Kenobi.
Looking to catch up on the latest Star Wars books? Try listening to them on audio, featuring sound effects, top-notch narrators, and music directly from the movies. Star Wars audiobooks are the definitive listening experience. From Han Solo to C-3PO to Admiral Akbar, you'll recognize all of your favorite characters. Listen to movie tie-ins like Rogue One and The Force Awakens, to book titles such as Phasma and Battlefront II Inferno Squad, to classic audiobooks like William Shakespeare's Star Wars. With Star Wars audiobooks, you'll have plenty of Star Wars listening to keep you entertained. Visit penguinrandomhouseaudio.com/Star Wars for sample clips and to start listening now.
The Star Wars Digital Card Trader collecting app features incredible images from many aspects of the saga, including the original trilogy, the prequels, The Clone Wars, Rebels, The Force Awakens, and Rogue One. It's the quality you have come to expect from Topps. It's also easy to get into and really fun, too. Your favorite Star Wars characters, scenes, and moments are in every pack. To get started, download the app for free from iTunes or Google Play, and then be sure to open the app each day for free credits to spend on card packs from the Cantina. Plus, if you can't get what you're looking for, there's a place to trade with your friends as you complete your Star Wars collection. And if you're an experienced collector, there are exclusive cards, special inserts, and autograph opportunities for you to enjoy. Don't worry about missing the cards and sets you want either, as you can sign up for notifications right on the app. The Star Wars Digital Card Trader collecting app from Topps can be downloaded for free from iTunes or Google Play, be sure to download the app and start your collection today. The Star Wars Digital Card Trader collecting app from Topps is available now. And remember, these are the cards you're looking for.
All right, U.S. hobby game giant Fantasy Flight Games and French-based video game and board game company Asmodee announced the creation of Fantasy Flight Interactive. The new group will focus on creating fresh new digital experiences based on Fantasy Flight Games brands. Now, many Star Wars fans will probably know Fantasy Flight as the creators of the epic Star Wars tabletop games Armada, Imperial Assault, X-Wing Miniatures, and more. Fantasy Flight Interactive is a new development studio with projects already in the works for Steam and other platforms to follow. Christian Peterson, founder of Fantasy Flight Games and CEO of Asmodee North America, said they didn't create a new company just to translate board games into digital games. They're focused on the bigger picture of the experience fans can have on new platforms. Fantasy Flight Interactive is based in Madison, Wisconsin, and will be led by 25-year video game veteran Tim Gerritsen, who worked on video games like BioShock Infinite, Prey, and Rune. The question I want to know is, how will Fantasy Flight's Star Wars license play into this new venture, and what type of strategy games will they bring to the video game world?
Bethany, are you much of a gamer?
I am not, so I would not be the best person to talk to about this. To be honest.
Well, fortunately, Tom is, and I think this new story is near and dear to your heart because of your other passion, which is gaming.
Oh, it most certainly is. As I sit here just inches away, my shoulder is just off of my copy of Imperial Assault and my version, my Ghost X-Wing miniatures and the Falcon miniature. I love this. I am so excited to see if they are able to. Now, I think it's interesting and notable that they say that this is not just a way to translate these board games into digital games, that this is going to be something even bigger. And so every Fantasy Flight game I've played, whether it's a Star Wars or otherwise, are so intricate and so engrossing when it comes to like gameplay that I can't wait to see what this is going to look like in video format. And it doesn't specify in the press release that I put on the Coffee with Kenobi Twitter page. Or a Twitter feed, rather, they don't design or they don't tell exactly what digital format they're talking about. So is this like PC gaming? Is this mobile gaming? Is this, console gaming? I don't know. I really look forward to seeing what a Fantasy Flight looks like on this video game format.
And how will they translate the card game Destiny to this too?
Right. And I think that's based on some of the reports that I saw, a lot of the media outlet that were reporting on this were using that game, Destiny, as their image and kind of talking point. So I don't know. Fantasy Flight Interactive, they haven't made any announcement of specific future projects. But one thing they do have is they've got their Fantasy Flight Interactive website up. So be sure to stay tuned on this one. Moving on to another story from Star Wars, PPW Toys has available on their website for pre-order 5 different sets, each sold separately, of Star Wars plastic nesting dolls. Now, for those of you trying to imagine what nesting dolls are, they start with one large hollow doll that opens to reveal another slightly smaller doll that then opens to reveal an even slightly smaller doll, and so on till you have a teeny tiny one. Now, I'm familiar with these because my grandmother brought a set of nesting dolls home from Russia back in the 1970s for me to play with. And they are, I will say, as a kid and even as an adult showing it to my own kids, they're quite engaging and fascinating even today. The 5 Star Wars sets, nesting doll sets, are Jedi Androids, The Rebellion, The Empire, The Last Jedi, The Resistance, and The Last Jedi, of course, The First Order. So let me give you a rundown of one of the sets so you get an idea of what this might look like. Take a BB-E9, that fits into a First Order Stormtrooper, that fits into a Praetorian Guard, which fits into a Captain Phasma, which fits into a Kylo Ren. Got a picture of that?
We'll see. And this is why we have you on for the hard-hitting news that we must know.
Oh, my God.
Exactly. Gosh.
This is so cute. Isn't like it? I just pulled up pictures of them, and I really want them. Man, this is becoming one of those gonna hurt your wallet segments because, guys, these are so cute. I love the Rebellion ones because the littlest one is an Ewok, and it's adorable.
They are very cute. I definitely agree with that. And isn't this design, this toy, doesn't it come originally from Russia? Am I right about that?
Yes.
That's what I thought.
Yeah. This is something that people used to design, like craftsmen would spend months and months and months creating Russian nesting dolls, like very beautiful gold inlaid ones for the Russian czars and their families. And then if their designs weren't liked, bad things happened to them. So
wow. I didn't know that. And of course, this is more evidence that the Force is working, because I had no idea, Bethany, that you even knew that. And that we would even have this new story. So look at that synergy.
That's a great
Star
background.
Star Wars community at its finest.
Bring in the Russian history. That's what
right.
You can count on me for.
That's right.
That is fantastic. Yeah, these are so cool. These sets are going to retail at $16.99. And according to the PPW website, while now they are taking pre-orders, the pre-orders will ship on November 15th. Well, and finally, Halloween is upon us, Charlie Brown. And if
Good
you
grief.
Are looking... Good grief. If you are looking forward to some awesome Star Wars costumes, be sure you stay out of the pumpkin patch and then make a road trip to Parma, Ohio, but not for the costumes or the great pumpkin, but for the two-story AT-AT Halloween yard display. According to an article from the Associated Press on the U.S. News and World Report, Nick Meyer built this 1,000-pound replica AT-AT out of wood, plastic barrels, and hard foam. He's been building this AT-AT with friends since last April, and he says he's not a Star Wars fanatic. I don't know how, but he likes building unique displays. As in the past, he's built a life-size pirate ship and the cabin from Friday the 13th. Have you seen pictures of this?
I always admire when people can do things like this because...
Yeah,
it's a talent that I can't even imagine possessing.
I'm not that technically minded with being able to build, especially something to that scale. Like it blocks the view of his house. Like you can't see half of his house behind it. Wouldn't
right.
that be like an amazing treehouse idea? Like just
yes.
make a fort.
Oh, wow!
That would be so cool.
You'd have all the kids in the neighborhood over all the time.
Yeah.
Oh, and Dan, you could take that radio flyer land speeder and just ride that land speeder right up to the AT-AT treehouse. That'd be fantastic. One thing I liked about on the U.S. News and World Report site, where they have a little video of a local news broadcast. And one of the broadcasters was saying, I don't know, I think if I were one of the neighbors, I'm not sure how I'd feel about this. Well, first of all, I would love it. But second of all, I would take this over the Friday the 13th cabin any day.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
No doubt about that.
Mm-hmm. So much good. Fun. So much fun.
All right. Well, hey, thank you for those. And we're going to take a break. When we come back, Mark Pavia is going to talk Star Wars, horror films, and much more. We'll also continue our CWK book study on Leia, Princess of Alderaan. This is Coffee with Kenobi.
This is Coffee with Kenobi.
Coffee with Kenobi was sponsored by Penguin Random House Audio. Looking to catch up on the latest Star Wars books? Try listening to them on audio. Featuring sound effects and music directly from the movies, Star Wars audiobooks are the definitive listening experience. From brand new audiobooks such as Phasma and Battlefront 2 Inferno Squad, to our blockbuster movie tie-in editions, you'll have plenty to keep you entertained. Visit penguinrandomhouseaudio.com/Star Wars for sample clips and to start listening now. Coffee with Kenobi was also sponsored by the Star Wars Digital Card Trader Collecting App from Topps. If you love Star Wars and love the excitement of chasing your favorite Star Wars collectibles, The Star Wars Digital Card Trader Collecting App from Topps is for you. Download the free app from iTunes or Google Play and collect your favorite images from the classic 1977 Star Wars cards to the Clone Wars, Star Wars Rebels, The Force Awakens, Rogue One, and now The Last Jedi. Collect and trade with friends new and old through the Star Wars Digital Card Trader Collecting App from Topps. These are the cards you're looking for. We are back, and it is coffee chat time. This is going to be a great coffee chat. We have two sections of the program. The first one, we have the honor of speaking with Mark Pavia. Mark is a horror filmmaker and a great family friend. So welcome to Coffee with Kenobi.
Thanks, Dan. You said coffee with Kenobi, but I'm having Cabernet with Kenobi. I'm having wine with Kenobi.
That's good. That's okay. A good move. So yes. you, as I said, you are a horror filmmaker.
Yes, I am.
How did you kind of get into the business?
Well, I've been making movies my entire life. You know, and I made my first film when I was 8 years old, you know, on Super 8. And I'm one of those guys, one of those movie brats.
Oh, yeah.
And everything I've always done has been horror movies. This is the very first thing I've ever done. My very first movie was a 2-minute version of, like, Dracula when I was 8. And I just kept
making. Love that book, by the way.
Yeah. I just kept making movies on Super 8 and kind of just teaching myself and watching film to teach myself. And my passion for film just got bigger and bigger. I made movies through high school. I got a scholarship to Columbia College in Chicago. And that's where I made some student films that got me into the business. So let me explain that real quick. So when I was at Columbia, I actually made a 16-millimeter horror short. It was a zombie short called Drag, and which is about a woman dragging a dead body through a zombie-plagued world, right?
As you do.
Yes, exactly. And oh, here's a really interesting aside. It was shot by my DP on it was Mauro Fiore, who would actually go on to win the Academy Award for Avatar years and years later.
Wow.
Yeah, isn't that crazy?
Amazing.
Yeah, and the other short, because I said I shot two shorts in film school, like that got attention, many shorts, but two that kind of got attention. The very first one I shot was a movie called Unexcused Absence, which was shot by Janusz Kaminski, who of course is Steven Spielberg's DP on all his movies today. So there you go. I had two.
Not too shabby.
DPs in a row. So I made this movie called Drag. And, you know, I said it was a short, but in actuality, it was 40 minutes in length. And the idea was to get some recognition for it, to try to break into the industry, because, you know, I had studied how other filmmakers had done this. And especially, I'm a huge fan of Steven Spielberg. And he had, as you know, he had, and your listeners know, he got into the business with a short film of his own called Amblin. You know what I mean? So you study the greats and you do what they did and you just kind of do your thing and you kind of take their knowledge and mix it with your own and hocus pocus, right?
THX 1138.
THX 1138. Exactly. So, which is a crazy short. Obviously, you've seen it. That's an amazing short. Yeah. But anyways, so I made this short, and when it was finished, it turned out really well. And I started making a long list of people I should send it to, and in Hollywood, but also in New York, and one of the producers and other filmmakers. And one of the producers I sent it to in New York City was Richard P. Rubenstein, who was George Romero's producer on all the great George Romero, Martin, Dawn of the Dead, Knight Riders, Creepshow, you know, Day of the Dead. So he's one of the great horror producers of all time who I had great admiration for. So I sent the movie to Richard Rubenstein. At the end of sending all these movies out, I kind of sat there and I said, you know what? I'm going to send it to Stephen King. Now, I didn't know Stephen King. I was just a huge fan of Stephen King. I had read all his books since I was a kid. So I kind of went into stalker mode, and I kind of figured out where he lived. We all know he's in Bangor, Maine, but I kind of saw some photographs, and I kind of did this and this in certain magazines, and I put some information together, and I wrote a letter. I shoved the VHS tape in an envelope and sent it to Bangor, Maine. Now, here's the interesting thing. You know, the universe kind of lined up. You know how that happens, Dan? Like, it just when
the
things
force
are supposed
was with you.
The force was with me. Just happened. So I sent it to Rubenstein, and little did I know, that Richard and Stephen were making a mini series together. Remember in the 90s, all those Stephen King mini series on like ABC and Stand and Langoliers. And you remember all that? Yes. So they were making one of these mini series, and Richard came into the office one day and started talking about this short film he got. And Stephen started talking about a short film he got, and they realized they were talking about the exact same short film, which is My Movie Drag. And they're like, wow, that movie is amazing. They really loved the film. And Stephen King says, we should give Night Flyer to Pavia. Now, Night Flyer is one of the, Stephen King's short stories, one of his famous short stories about a vampire pilot, you know, a vampire who flies an airplane in and out of desolate airfields, blah, blah, blah. Attacks his victims and flies away again. And sleeps in the belly hold of the plane. It's really creepy. Great.
It's awesome. King. I love it.
Yeah, it's a great short story. And but they had it in development for many years. They didn't really know how to make this movie. They didn't really know how to tell this story. Stephen actually took a crack at the screenplay, but I think he was a little too close to it. And he didn't really know what to do. Some other writers took a shot. And Stephen's like, let's see if Pavia can do it. So Richard Rubenstein, 2 weeks later, calls me up and says, hi, it's Richard Rubenstein. You know, I freak out. You know, I'm in Chicago, right? And I'm like, oh, wow, hi, Richard. And he's like, yeah, we really loved your short movie. And we want to bring you to New York to talk, you know, to pitch us on how you would make this into a feature film. And I couldn't believe it. You know, I was blown away. And I said, pitch? Like, I didn't even know what that meant. You know, I was like, baseball term? You know, like, what does this mean? You know, but he's like, yeah, just tell us how you're going to do it. I'm like, oh, got you. So 2 weeks later, they fly out me and my writing partner at the time, Jack O'Donnell. And we fly out to New York. We go into the office. They pick us up at the airport in a limousine. Can you imagine? Like these two kids out of, you know, outside of Chicago, suburbs of Chicago.
Yeah, you had to be just through the moon. I mean, I can't even imagine.
I was like, my jaw was on the floor of the car the entire time. You know what I mean? Yeah. I think Richard knew that, which he probably got a lot of pleasure out of. You know, he thought it was really funny. But anyway, so they pick us up. We go to the offices right in Manhattan. I had never been to New York at that point until that moment. We meet Richard, and Richard goes, oh, and by the way, Steven's joining us for lunch. He flew in from Maine. He wanted to meet you.
Wow.
And I was like, okay. I was playing it off like, yeah, that's cool. Oh, cool. Yeah, no problem. And then Richard kind of leaves the room. And then I look at Jack, my buddy, and I was like, oh my God, I was going to faint. You know what I mean?
Yes.
But anyway, so we go to have lunch in the conference room. 5 minutes later, Stephen King walks in, and it was like the back of a book cover, just like standing in front of you, like staring at you. And he goes, life's a drag, then you die, baby. And he gives me a big bear hug, which that was the tagline of the movie. And he sits down. He's like, okay, Mark, I love that movie. Tell me how you want to do this. And for 45 minutes, I just talked about – I went through each scene, like how I would make this movie. And based on that meeting, they hired me on the spot. For Jack and I to co-write it and for me to direct the movie. And we wrote 6 drafts in 6 months. Steven read every draft, gave us his notes. And we were shooting, you know, a few months later, we were shooting in Wilmington, North Carolina with the late, great Miguel Ferrer, you know, starred in the movie. And that's how I ended up making Stephen King's The Night Flyer. And the cool thing, as an aside, a few years later, because the movie, we finished the film, it turned out really well, it did well, and its reputation has grown over the years. And a few years after the release, Richard hired me again to write the sequel script. He wanted to do a sequel, which we ended up calling Night Flyer, Fear of Flying. And I wrote the original draft myself, and then Stephen, who had, you know, the okay on all these things, you know, read it and really dug it and said, Mark, do you mind if I write on this with you? You know, like, no, Stephen, you can write on this with me. That's fine. You know, that's fine. Of course you can. You know, man, come on. So we actually ended up co-writing the sequel script together, which is really great. You know, he would write some scenes. I would write some scenes. And we rewrite each other. And
am I right that you were the only person to ever co-write with him?
I think at the time, I'm not sure if he's ever co-written another movie script. You know, obviously he's done novels, but I'm not sure he's ever done a movie script other than Night Flyer 2, which, you know, has never been made. But it's still out there, but it was never produced. Wow. Yeah,
phenomenal. I mean, that's phenomenal.
Yeah, that's how I got in.
That may be one of the most amazing stories we've ever had on the show.
You know what's weird is, like, when you're in the middle of it and you're young and you're right after film school, you don't realize what that story means. Now, being in the industry for a few years now I recognize how crazy of a Cinderella story that is.
Yeah.
Yeah. But at the time, I was like, oh, cool. You know, but I just didn't understand how momentous that was. Sure. A moment, you know what I mean, in my life.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's those first steps into a larger world, right? Which brings us, of course, to Star Wars. And you are a lifelong Star Wars fan. Tell me about that.
Oh, I'm all about the original trilogy. You know what I mean? Like, oh, yeah. I love all the movies, you know, but I'm all about the original trilogy because they just, you know, they shaped and formed so much of my filmmaking personality. Now, I saw the movie, you know, in the movie theaters in 1977. I was 12 years old. And can you imagine being 12 years old and seeing Star Wars for the first time? You know what I mean?
Yes.
Yeah.
I was seven in 1978.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yes.
Or so six, actually.
So it was. So did you see the re-release in 78? Is that when you first saw it?
I saw it in a drive-in in New Orleans, Louisiana. It was I did some research on that actually over the summer, and it was the only time it had made its original drive-in run. It was, I think, the second release of the film.
Yes, yes, the re-release, and it was that poster, right? The really tattered, weird one. You know, the torn up poster that looks like it's on the side of a building. Do you know what I'm talking?
I do. Yes. It's in my office right now.
Of course it is.
Yeah.
So anyway, I was in Jackson, Michigan. My father took me to all these movies, and we knew this really cool science fiction movie was coming out, but we didn't really know much about it, you know, except that, you know, the trailer looked great title. And I was just, you know, I was 12 years old and I had to see this thing. So my dad took me. And the moment that music started, I mean, I'm sure you've heard this, you know, countless times, but I'm sorry. The moment John Williams' score kicks in, that title flies back, you know, then the crawl, I was hooked. And then that Star Destroyer, that great opening shot, I could not believe my eyes and how big that ship was. You know what I mean? It was just incredible. And I was just transported for 2 hours. I loved that movie. And I went back to see it. Oh, my God, 20, 25 times, literally. You know, in the next year.
Sure.
And I bought the soundtrack instantly. And to this day, I'm the biggest John Williams fan. But I would listen to it over and over and over again. You remember right when they couldn't keep up. They had no idea. You know, the filmmakers, George Lucas and, you know, 20th Century Fox, no one knew what they had. You know, it surprised everybody.
Right.
So, you know, Lucas, the genius that he was, he held on to the merchandising rights to that movie, which is what made Lucasfilm. I don't need to tell you, but you know what I mean? But I remember waiting for all the merchandise. I had to have everything Star Wars, right?
Oh, yeah.
And remember before the figures came out, you could buy the little
early bird.
Then you would put, I had that thing. Like, you bought a piece of cardboard.
Do you still have it?
No.
Oh.
I know, right? I know. It's probably worth a fortune, right?
Yeah, it is. They're not, I mean, they're out there, but not too many of them are in, you know, collector shape.
Yeah, it would probably finance my next movie. You know what
there
I mean?
You go.
But I was just obsessed. You'll probably laugh at this. So I was already making movies, like I told you, because I was making movies since I was 8 years old. And the film that actually made me want to make it into a career was when I saw Jaws. I saw Jaws in, you know, the movie theater when I was 10 years old.
Right.
And I watched it through the armpit of my sister because I was so terrified.
Oh, you know, yes. What I
mean? And I walked out.
And it still holds up, by the way.
Oh, it's an amazing movie. Yeah, you know, it's
perfect, I think.
And it is perfect, actually. Perfect Hollywood movie. And I walked out of Jaws saying, I'm going to make movies. I'm going to do that with my life, you know, for the rest of my life. And so when I saw Star Wars, it just reinforces passion and desire in me. So what I used to do, you'll laugh, what I used to do was I used to sneak in tape recorders, like cassette recorders, you know what I mean? And I would record the movies on cassette tape. You know, so I would sneak in and I would lean down in my chair. Star Wars would begin. So I'd push play and record. And then I would just like record it. And then I would be desperately looking because I kind of had a time. Like, you know, what was it? 30-minute sides back in that day? It was a 30-minute?
That sounds right, yeah.
Yeah. And then I would flip the tape over and I was just fumbling with this huge recorder. You know, but I would tape the movie and then I would go home and I would just listen to the film. And that's how I would study screenwriting,
right?
You know, and actors delivering their lines and music and sound effects and mixing, and I would just over and over. So I was obsessed with Star Wars, and that goes for the two sequels, you know, like 3 years apart, you know, in 80 and 83.
Right.
Well, Empire Strikes Back and then Jedi.
Well, you mentioned George Lucas briefly, yeah. And, you know, of course, with the prequels and things of that nature, sometimes people over the years have given him a bad rap, but I've always thought that was unwarranted.
Yes.
Tell us why George Lucas is important to cinema.
Are you kidding? Because he changed the world. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That is why. I mean, he's a genius, and you can't deny that. You know, here's a guy who actually just wanted to make a really great kids film. And that's what Star Wars was. And that's why it works so well, because it's so simple. And people kind of forget that Star Wars was actually made. He wanted to make a fairy tale.
You know, over the summer, in April, I went to a Star Wars celebration and George Lucas was there.
Yeah.
And he told the audience that Star Wars was originally made for 12-year-olds.
Told you.
Yep.
And guess who was 12 years old? That was me. Yeah. So based, as you know, obviously based on the, you know, serials, that the Flash Gordon serials he loved, you know, from the 30s and 40s. And that's why that movie resonates, you know, because it's so simple that everybody around the world, especially children, can relate to it and understand good versus evil. You know what I mean? And it takes a genius to... Science fiction movies were a disaster at the box office and in Hollywood at the time. That's what people have to understand. Nobody was making science fiction films except for like Logan's Run, you know what I mean? Which was an interesting movie, but didn't do really well. You know what I mean? Oh, Planet of the Apes a few years earlier. But nobody was, 2001, of course, but that was incredible. You know, Stanley Kubrick's esoteric masterpiece. But no one was making a film like this. You know what I mean? So they were taking, you know, they were taking a huge risk, but he just followed his gut and his soul, and he stuck to it. And the man, genius, and you know, what he created.
He put fun back into the culture when Vietnam and things were weighing people down.
Yeah. And, you know, between Steven Spielberg and George Lucas, you know, what they've done together at the time, you know, is incredible. And I've always loved those stories. And you've heard this story a million times, but I love it, is that when he, you know, when George... You know, the movie brats were all hanging around each other at the time. Spielberg, Lucas, Scorsese, De Palma, you know, everybody was just hanging out and everybody would show each other their movies. And George Lucas showed an early cut of Star Wars to his friends. But this was before all the special effects were done and and John Williams' score obviously wasn't in there. And, you know, in place of the effects, he cut in the old... war footage, you know, old World War, yeah. And Spielberg was the only one who liked it. Isn't that incredible? Like, it was a depression. Oh, yeah. No, he showed this early cut to all of his friends, and they went out to dinner afterwards, and everybody was kind of making fun of him, like, especially Brian De Palma. Like, he was going, who's that big hairy guy?
That's ironic.
Yeah, like, what's going on with this movie, The Force? And they were just kind of teasing him. And Spielberg said, it's going to be a huge hit. It's going to be a huge hit. And he was able to see past, you know, the incomplete special effects shots. You know, George had, like, classical music cut in before the John Williams score. And Spielberg, as you probably know this, so Spielberg is the one who said, you should use my guy who just completed Jaws score. You know what I mean?
Right.
You should use my guy, John Williams, for your movie. So that's how that happened. But here's the ironic thing about that screening. Brian De Palma is all over George Lucas, right? Teasing him to death. And Lucas was really mad. But it was Brian De Palma who said, you should have a crawl at the beginning of this movie that kind of explains where we are and what's going on. So we kind of know what this is right when those first shots start. And that was actually kind of amazing. So thank you, Brian De Palma.
And that's the classic in media res, where the story starts in the middle, like the Odyssey. And that's why we have the great American mythology that is Star Wars. We will have part two of our interview with Mark Pavia on show number 95. Now let's have our second cup of coffee here for the coffee chat and resume our CWK book study for Leia, Princess of Alderaan. We are definitely getting close to the end of this book. Chapter 23 starts. The ally search is commencing for Leia, as she has realized, as we mentioned on the last show, she needs allies in the Senate to help her with what she plans on doing in the future. And she's not even 100% sure what that means, but she knows this is important. So she starts with HARP allies from Chandrila, where Mon Mothma is, of course, from. And there's some interesting interplay there. But on 293 is something that I think is fascinating. Leia finds herself in a mudslide, and it's pretty intense. And it's almost like she's going to drown in mud. This is all part of these challenges that she has to go through. And there's this interesting section on page 293, and I'll just read it to you. Chastelon pulled himself together almost instantly and held out his hand to Leia, courtly and formal. "Will you rise, my lady?" Usually she found his emphasis on her royal status irritating, but today it felt comforting, like being wrapped in a familiar blanket. Leia let him pull her to her feet. Although the world tilted oddly at first, she soon regained her balance. Now, the reason I read this is the sentence, "Leia let him pull her to her feet." This reminded me of The Force Awakens and when Finn first meets Rey and he goes to lift her up and she rejects the hand because she has her own power and she doesn't even know this guy. So in this instance, Leia willingly allows it to happen, and that was what I think made Rey so strong too. She wasn't willing to let Finn do that. She didn't allow that to happen. She was annoyed. That just shows there's power with these two, and I'm not saying that they were related in any way. What I am saying is that they're both strong, and they both have a unique voice, which I love. Speaking of unique voices, I appreciate you sticking with me through the show with my voice. Hopefully it's getting much better, and I think it will be. So we're on page 294. There's this wonderful pathfinding quote that I'm going to read to you. "Pathfinding can be dangerous. Every single one of you knew that before you began. Every single one of you thought the danger somehow didn't apply to you because you're young and stupid about that kind of thing. You have to learn better, and I'd rather you learn out here with your field generator to save you than somewhere else in the galaxy where you get no safety net, no teammates, and no second chances. And here it is, the big one. Pathfinding isn't just about learning how to find your way around. It's about learning how to think on your feet, how to deal with real risks, even how to face the fear of death." I just love that because it's another metaphor to her adapting and being able to adapt to her future. So probably the most important part of this entire section for today is on page 298 and 299. Leia finds herself in a section of space where there are dozens of large rebel ships. And this is when she realizes this is war. This is my family and the rebellion planning for war, and this is their armory. This is where it's going to happen. It's pretty crazy. So then we go to page 300 to 301. And we get the Empire spin on the Clone Wars and their propaganda for it. And I want to read it exactly how it's put. And here's what it says. "Count Dooku of Sereno led the Separatist faction away from the faltering Republic. Although he acted out of craven ambition, with disregard for the billions of lives that will be lost, Dooku was correct about one thing. The Republic had indeed become rotten at its core, no longer governed by law, order, and discipline. had the Senate chosen a different chancellor after the deposition of the weak, ineffectual Valorum, Galactic Order itself might have fallen apart, but the times we live through create the heroes we need. And I love, again, how this mirrors real history, but the Empire spin on things and the propaganda that they propagate. So, page 306 and 307 is a wonderfully tense scene where Tarkin suddenly shows up on Alderaan and he crashes this dinner party. And we know through this book that dinner parties are how they're trying to plan and make, you know, a course for what they want to do with the rebellion, how they want to face the Empire. And he crashes it, and they're afraid that he suspects something. And to circumvent this, Mon Mothma and Bail and Brea create this play, really, where they allude to the fact that Bail is having an affair with Mon Mothma, which is obviously not true. But it's so realistic that Leia's crying, and Tarkin says this is inappropriate, and he leaves clearly annoyed. And that was their plan all along. But it really shook Leia to the core and just shows, you know, again, how in advance and what kind of things they're preparing for, because they want to be ready for anything, because this is too fragile for anything to mess it up. On 312 to 313, Mon Mothma defends Leia. Being in the know, it's a very, very powerful scene I urge you to look at. And at the end of chapter 25, Leia and Amelin decide to stow away. Mon Mothma discovers them, and she's not really happy. But the big thing here is that she realizes that Wymy Lenz may be a double agent, and that makes her worried about what the Emperor might already know. So again, the tension, the suspense is building because everything is so fragile. So they're really worried. Now, Brea wants to take Leia into the fold, like fully into this rebellion. But Bail does not, and he's vehemently opposed. He really gets angry at Brea, apparently more so than maybe he ever has. And she says, please keep all these things secret now from your father. Again, there's a little bit of tension within the family, but they are for good reasons. And it shows how she has won her mother over, and really how they've just kind of found a way to embrace the role that both of them have in this craziness. Now, on 340 to 341, Leia is encouraged to go to a formal ball for the Royal Academy. And there's this huge scene with her and the romance that is building with her. And I'm sure many people will love that, so feel free to check that out. Now, on page 345, there's this wonderful quote about opposites. I'm going to read that to you real quickly. It says, and this is her, she, Leia and Amelin are having a conversation about dress. And Amelin says, I want to be the precise opposite of Gadolinta. And it says, Leia shook her head. Don't do that. If you're only trying to be the opposite of a thing, you're still letting that thing define you. I never thought of it that way. The insight was new to Leia, too, but she recognized the truth in it. Dress how you really want to dress. Be who you want to be. Not whatever they are in Galantia, or wherever they aren't. Again, this is, I'm a broken record at this point, but that's because Claudia Gray is skillfully showing us Leia's evolution as a leader, as a personality, as really someone who can empathize with people, and she's not afraid to speak her mind, but there's wisdom in her youth. Sometimes when we speak our minds, especially when we are younger, it's not always the best, smartest thing to say, but Leia has a knack for this. And the only other thing I really want to put out at the end is that Tarkin calls Leia into his office, which really shakes her to the core, but she shakes his hand and tries to present herself as fragile and sort of awestruck by him, all the while cringing on the inside. But the way he starts talking, it makes her concerned that he knows about this shipyard of all these rebel ships that their family is, you know, putting together. And so she runs and warns Mon Mothma about it too, who's also really afraid. But at the end, Mon Mothma looks at Leia and says, may the Force be with you, Claudia Gray tells us, these are the only words that mattered. Very, very interesting. And we're getting so close to the end of this. In fact, for our next show, what we're going to be looking at is the end of the book. So we'll read chapters 29 to 32 of Leia, and we'll be done with that book. And then we're also going to read chapters 1 through 4 of Phasma for the next time. So we definitely have our work cut out for us, but it's been a fantastic ride so far, and I cannot wait to see what happens with the end of this book.
Listening to Coffee with Kenobi, you are the podcast you're looking for. This is...
Before we get to email, I want to thank our CWK sponsors, Penguin Random House Audio and the Star Wars Digital Card Trader Collecting App from Topps. Please support them the way they support our podcast. And remember to listen to new and archived shows of Coffee with Kenobi wherever you listen to podcasts, including iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, iHeartRadio, YouTube, Player FM, our Coffee with Kenobi website, www.coffeewithkenobi.com, or wherever you enjoy listening to your favorite shows. And if you listen to the show through iTunes, please leave us a review. We are also on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Pinterest, and Tumblr, and would love for you to check us out there. Be sure to listen to our CWK family of shows too, including Legends Library, Rebels Reactions, Comics with Kenobi, and Lattes with Leia.
A big thank you to Bethany Blanton and Tom Gross for joining us today. Where can listeners get in touch with both of you if they want to ask either of you a question or just say hello?
Well, you can find me on my personal social media at Bethany L. Blanton, Twitter and Instagram and Snapchat and all that good stuff. And I do Star Wars stuff at StarWarsReport.com. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Thanks for being on.
And you can catch me on Twitter at Draftline.
Thank you to each and every one of you for listening to and supporting Coffee with Kenobi, and for contributing to Star Wars Conversation. We will be back next week with two new co-hosts and more Star Wars talk. If you are participating in the CWK book study, be sure to finish Leia, Princess of Alderaan, and start Phasma chapters 1 to 4 for next week. This is the podcast you're looking for.
This podcast is not endorsed by the Walt Disney Company or Lucasfilm Limited. It is intended for entertainment and informational purposes only. The official Star Wars website can be found at www.starwars.com. Star Wars, all names, sounds, and any other Star Wars related items are registered trademarks and or copyrights of Disney and their respective trademark and copyright holders. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of Coffee with Kenobi unless otherwise indicated.
This is the podcast you're looking for.
There's no one here. Move along. Move along.